You're listening to California Burning, made possible by funding from Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, looking deeply into California's catastrophic wildfire problem. I'm Matt Fidler. All episodes of California Burning can be found wherever you get your podcasts or at californiaburning.net. On this episode of California Burning, we're talking about how the native Californians managed the land for thousands of years, affecting how that land evolved. First contact with native Californians from Europeans came from the Spanish explorer Juan Rodriguez Cabrillo in 1542. In his journals, he describes in great detail homes and villages populated by natives throughout every area of California that he explored, from San Diego to the Russian River, 100 miles north of San Francisco. It was unrecognizable by European farmers and ranchers, but the California natives cultivated the land to provide everything they needed. They did this over thousands of years with traditional and ceremonial practices. And while the practices varied in specifics between the multitudes of indigenous cultures, the big picture had a common theme. And no one I've recorded in this program hits upon this theme as eloquently as Valentin Lopez. He's the chairman of the Amamutzen people, who are from the Santa Cruz Mountains on the central coast of California. He spoke at a gathering I went to following the devastating fire season of late 2018.
My name is Valentin Lopez, and I'm the chairman of the Amamutzen tribal band. And our tribe is comprised of the descendants of the indigenous peoples that were taken to Mission San Juan Bautista and Mission Santa Cruz. I was elected chair in 2001. At that time, the elders said that our tribe, we need to start presenting our tribe to the public and letting them know who we are. I mean, we are responsible for the waters, for the air, for the rocks, for the sand, for the gravel, for the oceans, for the birds, for the fish, for the fog, for the shadows. Those are all responsibilities. Those are our relatives. They have the same father, creator. They have the same mother, Mother Earth, as we have. They are our relatives. And we have to take care of our relatives the same way you take care of your relatives, with love, with kindness, with gentleness, with patience. That's the way we took care of Mother Earth. We developed clans, and we had a bird clan and a fish clan and a bear clan and an elk clan. And their responsibility was to go out and name everything they could about that namesake, how to take care of it for the four seasons. Here, our climate is so mild. The bears, the grizzly bears, and there were many, many grizzly bears here, they did not hibernate. But it was our responsibility to make sure that they had enough food resources throughout the four seasons. And that was our responsibility. Our people learned, first and foremost, to take care of the land, that we had to take care of the spirituality of the land. We had to keep it spiritual. And so we had prayers, and everything we prayed throughout the day, that we could fulfill our obligation to take care of Mother Earth. We created ceremonies, such as a ceremony for balance in the four seasons, so that we wouldn't have too much summer and have drought, or too much winter and have incredible flooding. We wanted a good balance of seasons so that we had a predictable climate and we could take care of it that way. We also created a lot of ceremonies on how to take care of for the animals. We had ceremonies to call back the salmon so that when it was time for them to migrate back up the streams and up the rivers and stuff like that, you know, we'd first clean the rivers and stuff like that and make sure that the channels were clear and the rocks were ready, you know, for the spawning. And then it was time to call home the salmon. And whenever we called on the salmon, we sent word that there was no fishing. No one was to fish. You know, you see in the animal kingdom how the strong and the most determined are the ones that win and dominate. And they're the ones that breed and pass on their genes to the next generation. The salmon are the same. Those first salmon to run up that stream, that first week's worth of salmon, they're running up the stream. They're the strongest and most determined. So we would not fish them. We'd let them get up so that they could pass on their genes to the next generation. That's one way that we use to take care of the salmon as an example. We also learned with the migrating geese. We had ceremonies for the migrating geese, and we knew they fly from thousands of miles away. And when they got here, they were tired and exhausted. So we had to make sure that those grasslands and the wetlands were ready for them. And so we also had the responsibility to take care of insects. And so we made sure that there was plenty of insects for the migrating geese. So whenever they came on, they have plenty of to eat so they can get that strength, that protein, and get that body weight back on so they can continue their journey. These are the things that our ancestors learned regarding all how to take care of all animals. This indigenous knowledge was passed on generation after generation for well over 15,000 years. And if you think of that in terms of generations, that's 800, 900, perhaps 1,000 generations or more. Our people did that. We learned that plants, each and every plant that you see, has a responsibility to take care of the fungi, to take care of the insects, to take care of the birds, to take care of the four-legged, and to take care of people. There was no monoculture in those days, I can tell you that. Every plant had to do that. And because of that, our plants grew very resistant to flooding, very resistant to drought. A lot of our grasslands, the root systems can go down 20 feet. And that makes them very resistant to drought and to fire, and to flooding. Whenever we have a cultural burn, you guys, you know, call them prescribed burns. We call them cultural burns. They're very important for our culture. You know, whenever we have a fire, a controlled burn, it serves a lot of purposes. First, when it goes through, it just creeps along. It's a very low intensity fire, and it just kind of creeps along the ground. You know, we go through and we trim the branches, anything where it can give fuel to climb up the trees and stuff like that. We'll clip all that stuff down, and then we have the fire, and it just kind of crawls through slowly. But when it's going through slowly, it's killing the ticks and the fleas and other pests like that in the ground. And then that smoke, when it goes up, I said that, you know, whenever we pray, we always, you know, we have fire and smoke. Well, this right here is a way of cleansing and blessing the trees, because that whenever that smoke goes up into the trees, it's smudging the trees, it's blessing the trees, and cleansing the trees. And that smoke goes up and it chokes out the insects that are in the trees, and those insects fall down. And so now you have a much healthier tree there, particularly the acorns. And this is a way of bringing spirituality back to the trees and back to the landscape. You know, if we're going to restore these lands, and we believe the restoration of Mother Earth must be led by indigenous people, because only indigenous people have the moral authority. Creator gave us that obligation. You know, our evidence must last seven generations. So, you know, the whole issue of climate change and stuff like that must be indigenous led. We totally firmly believe that. And we are working hard to take our position to provide that leadership. And we have people now getting, you know, and it's not going to be indigenous knowledge only. It's going to be blending the sciences with the indigenous knowledge, but it must be indigenous led. But those fires, you know, I mean, they're so important, and they just creep along. And in the old days, our people, they would light landscapes. They can tell weather much better than we can today. And they knew if the rains were 2 days out or 3 days out, they said, well, we want 3 days of burns. And there it goes, the burns. And then they had certain kinds of burns for the medicine plants, for the food plants. You know, I was with we're working with the Klamath and the Yurok tribe now also on sharing indigenous knowledge. You know, the guy picks up a leaf and he lights it. And he goes, if you burn now, you're going to get a 4 foot fire. You know, and then I saw him another time get it. He goes, you burn now, you'll have a 2 foot fire. You know, they just have that indigenous knowledge. And that's the indigenous knowledge. I said that we're trying to get knowledge from our neighboring tribes. And that's the kind of knowledge that we're trying to bring back.
Valentin Lopez talked to us for over an hour, and we're making his entire speech available for you on our website, californiaburning.net. Before we finish, I wanted to return to Margot Robbins again to address this mandate that Valentin talked about.
I would venture to guess that it's the same with all indigenous people, that they were put in that specific place at the beginning of time, and that we all have that same agreement with our home place. And our creation stories tell us that before humans were here, there was a pre-human race of spirit beings, and they created this world as we know it. And some of them came here first in spirit form, but agreed to take on physical form and stay. And those are the things that we see around us now, the plants, the trees, the animals, the rocks, the river. And so what we see now are the descendants of the pre-human race of spirit beings. And so when we give thanks to whatever it is that we are gathering, we acknowledge where they came from. And so it's like we're all just connected. And I think that we need to make those bonds, that connection, stronger on a much deeper level than we even know about. And we continue to learn about. And I think that fire is one of the venues that will take us into that deeper understanding.
When those connections are broken, your people have had to go through this broken connection that was kind of forced upon you. How do you even go about starting to repair these broken connections?
You repair the land and you make it healthy and you remind it of who it is and who it was meant to be. And you do the same thing with the people. Remind them of who they are, of who we are, and who we're meant to be. And I think that as we connect with the land, it speaks to us. Not in words like in English or Spanish or anything like that, but on a level of understanding that it just, you know, something comes into your mind and you know it to be a truth.
And I want to end this episode with a thought that should humble all of us. No matter what you think about what we know about the natural world, it's that even a person with great intentions and actions, like the great naturalist John Muir, can get some things wrong.
John Muir, and what he did was really important, and our world would not be the same today if he hadn't had the foresight to set aside these wilderness places or you know. But what he didn't realize, and most people don't realize, is that the natural places that they saw were not that way by accident or what you might call just naturally, that humans are a part of the ecosystem. And Native people took care of the land, and the land looked like that because of the interaction between humans and nature. There was no separation. When people such as yourself ask, can I come up and talk to you about what you guys are doing with fire? If at all possible, we always say yes, not to bring, you know, whatever to ourselves, because we're just doing a small part. But the important part is to spread the word, that we're part of the ecosystem, that fire is part of the ecosystem, and we're the ones who's meant to put fire on the land. Nature does it in some areas where there's lightning storms, but that's a small piece of it, and we're the other piece.
What Margot said there at the end, we're the other piece, I think that's a really important concept for us to digest if we want to get a grasp on this wildfire problem. We need to understand that our decisions have consequences, and that the answer isn't to do nothing, it's to actively do something. We are an active part of our own ecosystem. We can work against it, like trying to suppress all fires, and that may work for a little while, but eventually it gets us the results that we're seeing today. But we do have another option. We can learn from the Native Americans playbook and work with the ecosystem and give the forests the fire they need, but instead do it on terms that work for us, humans, and maybe we can get results that also work for us. Thank you for your time and insight, Margot Robbins, President of the Fire Management Council for the Yurok. And a big thank you to Valentin Lopez, chairman of the Amamutsin Tribal Band, and fire geographer Don Hankins, and the amazing host at the Tishtang Campground on the Hoopa Reservation where I stayed. On the next episode of California Burning, we're going to talk specifics of fire on the land, how it works, how you fight it, and how you can predict its behavior.
One of the reasons that this is black and see is our position. See the winds howling on us right now?
Yeah, you can tell. And I do not want to be here during a fire.
Right.
California Burning is a co-production of North State Public Radio, made possible with generous funding from Sierra Nevada Brewing Company. Original music is by Steven LaRosa of Wonder Boy Audio. Thanks to our team, Sarah Bohannon, Greg McVicker, and Jill Fincher. I'm the creator and host, Matt Fidler. All episodes are available for free at californiaburning.net. The song you're listening to right now is California Indians by Aragon Starr.
Can't keep those California Indians down. They're tough and resilient and holding their ground. Can't keep those California Indians down. From Miwok to Viejas, they are still standing.